Afternoon, there we go. Hard start. Oh man. Okay, we're not gonna say this is Shades of Things to come, but
no, it's
this
gonna be a
might
great
be
show.
Turn four at the car races, so don't change the channel just yet. Oh my gosh. You are listening to We the People. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, and they've got pretty much everything you want when it comes to John Deere products. Go up and check them out. They've got tractors, mowers, all the new electric products. They also handle the Ego line of electric, and they've got a ton of inventory. So go up and see them. They'll make you a great deal. Or give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226, or you can get them online at PapeMachinery.com.
Ta-da.
Ta-da.
So, we've sort of been on hiatus a lot. I've actually been working a lot, despite the things you heard in the last hour. People in elected office and people who work for people in elected office are really busy working for their constituents. Go figure that out.
Yeah. Kind of like what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly. But it hogs up a lot of time, and it doesn't stop at 5 o'clock, and it doesn't stop because it's Saturday.
Well, if you don't work for your constituents, you'll have more time to Facebook and...
Yes, promote yourself and look really important.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So look like you're getting something done.
So if you're enamored with a political figure who spends a tremendous amount of time promoting themselves and emailing you for fundraising...
Yeah, what aren't they doing?
You should probably take a look at what kind of... Let's see. No, the rule of thumb is never confuse activity with accomplishment, and that is true everywhere. So, lots going on in the big world. Lots going on in the big world, except our friend Harry Booyans isn't on yet, but he'll be on here shortly. We have not spoken with him since,
yes,
oh my gosh.
A long time.
Yeah. I don't know. 2021, I guess. Been a long time.
Oh, it hasn't been that long, has it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, been a long time. You can find archives. I've got archives on South Africa, going way back. South Africa is really a cautionary tale. Let's see. Hold on here. He's calling me, but not the station. So that's not going to work. All right. Back to reality here. I was going to read you something, but I didn't have it up on my screen yet. So, Dr. Harry Booyans, and if you haven't listened to previous shows with him, he is so much fun to listen to. He's got a million stories. He's really smart. And bottom line is, South Africa is very much a cautionary tale for America. And so, I don't usually do titles like this for the show, but I just kind of lifted it from one of the emails he sent me, and he said it focuses on what South Africa's journey can teach the United States, given that the Democrats are so desperately trying to turn the USA into South Africa. And for a lot of people, they're like, I don't think we have anything in common. Yeah, well, we do. And if that is news to you, please do listen to listen to today, but delve back into some of the previous shows with Dr. Booyans. He has got the historical perspective. He's written a massive book on it. It's really interesting. And you think like, well, you know, how long have the white people been in South Africa? Well, let's see. His ancestors go back 360 years in South Africa. They came there. They were Dutch. So, he lives with his family currently in Vancouver, Canada. He has been a scientist basically his whole life. And, exposed him to many of the realities of the Cold War and the period immediately following the fall of the Berlin Wall. His career included interaction with the United States and British defense establishments, and he applied his lifetime of research and interpretive skills to history and genealogy, and And it's interesting, but this is totally true. Writes with factual accuracy and engaging style on all of these different subjects. Hard Evidence is a trademark of his work, and it's won him a number of awards. He's focused on making Americans aware of what's happening in South Africa, the historic parallels between the two countries, and the warning that South Africa holds for Western civilization in general, and the United States of America in particular. What we've learned from him is that South Africa is the United States if we would have lost to the British. And it's really funny. We don't think about that. What if we did lose to the British? Well, you know, look at South Africa and you can see the unfortunate turn of events that has taken. They are currently just struggling on every single front. His book is Amabulu, AmaBhulu, and I have that listed on our page at wethepeopleradio.us. It's a really easy book to follow. It's all done in little snippets. It's 630 pages long, by the way. And he goes through piece by piece by piece all the different things that have happened. We did a show with him when they were toppling statues. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when they were toppling the statues here in the U.S.
Yeah, he said that was very familiar to him.
That is something that was imported from South Africa.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, easy for me to choke on. Anyway, and he, in those shows about the statues that we have in the archive, by the way, all the archives are commercial free and free to listen to, and, you know, please feel free to share them. We don't copyright any of that. We're happy for you to use it however you'd like. But we had pictures of the same guy in South Africa with a different sign, and same guy was here doing the same thing. So there are really, really close ties between the political things happening in both places. And unfortunately, we don't hear much about it here, which I'm sure is by design.
Well, absolutely. The media doesn't want to focus on unpleasantness going on.
No. So it sounds like we've got him on Skype today. So, you know, we're doing some engineer. Oh, maybe we're not doing that. Christina, I saw just shaking her head. However, we're doing it.
Unfortunately, we have some issues with the Skype, but we have Dr. Harry on the phone.
Okay.
He's already connected.
Nice. Well,
all right.
The infamous Dr. Booyans from a blast from the past, how the heck are you?
I'm fine, Aaron. I think I can hear Bo there in the distance. He's booming outside, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're coming in loud and clear.
Yeah, we always have these little connection puzzles.
Like I predicted, Skype would let us down.
Oh, of course.
There it is. He tells me on my side that everything is fine and that all the audio is good and everything is great. But when I click on the links that your good people provide, it says, oops, we appear to have a problem.
We've gotten lucky with WhatsApp before. So I don't know if in the future that's a thing we could try, but that's, let's see, we spoke with someone in Australia on WhatsApp, so I don't know about Canada. You know, you're like the closest far away guy we have, and yet...
Can't seem to make the link.
There's always a problem.
I know. It's like the gods are against us. So I kind of gave people a little backstory on you, and I stole part of your email that you sent me and used that for the title for the show. You know, a focus on what South Africa's journey can teach the United States, given the Democrats are desperately trying to turn the USA into South Africa.
Yeah.
So
that's how I perceive it. But I do need to tell the folks who are listening that not a word of what Aaron has said about me can be true.
Yeah, no, it's probably all fake. He's just a guy living in his mom's basement. Oh, no, that's somebody else. That was not popular. That wasn't popular when you were a kid or when we were kids. Living in your mom's basement and trying to be a big deal is a new phenomenon.
These days the kids can't escape the basement because they can't afford one brick on top of the other or two pieces of wood stuck together to call a house.
Yeah. It's not not a pretty picture. So you had listed just so many different things that we could talk about. So I have no agenda. Full disclosure, I have no agenda. It's all you.
Yeah, I got a handful of notes that I scribbled here in the last 2 hours, and they're weird the way I got them down here, because it says New World Order, which is something that my American friends always ask me about, World Economic Forum, which came home in a big thud in Canada, the Anglo-American Establishment, the only book on that general subject that I trust, the ever-present George Soros, or better known as Georgi Schwartz, his open society, and why should a South African be worried about that? The Rothschild bankers who kind of are wired into all of this. There's Lenin and his newspaper Iskra. There's the second oldest communist party on earth. There's a guy called Mandela. And there's a guy called Richard Stengel, who was Obama's propaganda czar. These things are all connected.
It's going to take some serious knitting needles to turn that into a sweater.
So, I wasn't too sure where on this pecking order one would start. And then there's the ever-present matter of South Africa. And, you know, the best way I can tell you that these things get wired together in my life is as follows. I did the completely innocent thing of telling my wife, let's save up some money. This is 2016, I believe. Let's save up some money. And no, it's earlier. It's 2014. And we're going to go on a riverboat trip on the Danube. You should do this once in your life because you can't afford to do it a second time.
And, good to know.
we got on this boat. And it's very nice, and it's one of these Viking cruises that you forever see advertised, and they are quite good. And the people on it were, the vast majority were Americans, and after the Americans came Canadians, and then after Canadians it was Australians, and after the Australians it was South Africans, many of whom were expats like ourselves. And they intentionally mix one so that you would meet different people at the dinner table. And this is how it would go. And you'll soon see what the problem is. You would sit down and you would politely, you know, start a conversation. But more typically, because Americans are quite voluble, it will be the American who speaks first. And the conversation would go something like this. So where are you folks from? We're from Canada. You don't sound Canadian. That's because we were born in South Africa. And then there'd be silence. And the next question would be, what do you think about Obama?
Really?
Wow.
That's literally how it went. Every single damn conversation. Okay, and I got up at the end of one of those dinners, and as I walked towards the stateroom, there was a gentleman. He was a Democrat, but he was a good one.
Okay,
they do exist, and he was from oh good heavens, the Granite State. What's it called again? New Hampshire.
Oh, New Hampshire.
Right?
Yeah.
Sorry, why do I know this stuff? Anyway, he was from New Hampshire, a very nice guy. And I said, you know, your national colleagues don't seem to like your president much. And I said, I don't like the guy, and it's so intense at these dinners that I almost feel like I have to defend this guy that I can't stand. And he looked at me, and he stopped. And I remember it was on the staircase as we're going down. He stops, and this guy's tall. He's like 6'6". He turns around to me, and he stares down from me out of the clouds. And he says, Harry, you defend him, and they will hang you with him.
Oh, wow. I was just getting ready to ask you, what was the general census of
well, the great leader? The consensus was apparently over.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. It's already 1220. Hold that thought, Harry. Hold that thought. We have to take a quick break.
Somehow be from South Africa immediately led to questions about President Obama. So, you know, I've never been able to get away from stuff like that.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing considering he was from New Hampshire. So we got to take a break.
From New Hampshire.
We got to take a break real quick.
We'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Harry Bouyans. We have not heard from him in forever. You can find him on the South Africa tab on WeThePeopleRadio.us.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Who's to say I can't do everything? Well, I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I'll find with everyone. We'll sing it.
There we go. Now we're back to the cruise ship. Back to the Danube, should I say. Cruise ship doesn't sound as good as Danube.
I'm done with a cruise ship now, and I think. But
that's so weird.
Yeah, that was quite an experience. And in the end, my wife told me, take a piece of paper, take a couple of scraps of paper, write the ISBN number of your book down on it, and the moment people ask you that question, tell them, here's a 635-page book. Just read it.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, so, I guess first just a tad about me. I guess I have to speak about that. For my sins, I was born back in 1953 in sunny South Africa, the very southern tip of the continent, in a city called Port Elizabeth, which was sort of the Detroit of South Africa. All the car companies were there. Nobody in town was rich. And one day, my mother hoisted me on her arm. It was evening, and she walked me across to the grassy knoll that was diagonally across from our house. And yeah, I intentionally call it the grassy knoll.
We enjoyed it.
I know my Americans after all these years. So, and she hoisted me up and she pointed out a moving star to me. And that was so cool that I immediately dropped all ideas of becoming an F-86 fighter pilot or a train driver or a farmer like my father and my grandfather respectively wanted me to be. And I made up my mind that I wanted to be one of the guys who put that thing up there. My mother said they were scientists. And later, when they were talking about it at home, I saw that their eyes were looking quite big and they sounded scared and they said it was Russians. I didn't know whether those were very big tarantulas or what they were, but these Russians were supposed to be scary. And so all I knew was that Russians were scary. They put it up there, but there were scientists that were involved, and I wanted to be a scientist. So that's what I eventually turned out to be. But somewhere through my very early teen years, I was in a little kiddie gang like all boys are. And I was the science guy of the team. I couldn't figure out how to turn anybody into a superhero, and the spider bites I got didn't do a darn thing for me. So I started building crystal radios and stuff like that. Yeah. And so at the tender age of about 13, I was listening to Radio Moscow and Radio Peking and all these guys on radios that I'd built. So I got all of that stuff in one ear at a very tender age. At the same time, my mother worked at a publication distribution company, a magazine distribution company, and they distributed, amongst other things, Life and Time and Newsweek. And the copies they didn't sell that week, she'd bring them home at the end of the week, and so I had a never-ending supply of Time, Life, and Newsweek. So I grew up with that front page cover of Life magazine with John saluting the casket of his father. I grew up with that on my wall. And I remember how scared I was at the time of the missile crisis. And, you know, my family was not as clued up on nuclear weapons as I was. And so I was scared out of my wits while they were having, you know, a barbecue outside and drinking beer. I was standing scared inside. So I had probably a weird calibration as a kid in that I heard foreign propaganda stations way too early, but I could, even as a little kid, I could hear that this is rubbish. And I had all of this background on world events and stuff. And so that kind of calibrated me. So I eventually ended up as indeed a scientist, worked on things that go bump in the night. And eventually in the year 2000, we moved to Canada, where I first worked with an Israeli company that particularly liked hiring South Africans because we're a very technocratic nation and we have a can-do attitude, I guess, so I've been told, and ended up being taken over by big American corporations. I've learned what those are all about, and they don't seem to work out in the end. And eventually, one day, I heard or saw an article by actually an ex-South African newspaper guy, and it was horrific. It was saying that the murders of farmers in South Africa is justified.
Wow.
And that's a guy here in Canada.
Wow.
And that made me pick up my pen, and I started writing. It took me 7 years to put this tome together that I call Amabulu. It just means the farmer people. And it is basically the history of South Africa from the first shot to the last, ending in about 2012. So I put that all together on the basis that, okay, I'm going to die, but I'm sure as hell I'm going to make sure that this thing is written so that when everything eventually happens as it is absolutely ordained to happen, no one's going to be able to say, I didn't warn them.
Yeah, no kidding. Tell me, when did you write the book? It was like 10 years ago?
Well, I started around, I did a half-hearted start in 2006, and then this event with this guy happened, so I mentally switched on totally to it. And whilst doing a day job, I wrote this thing over a period of some 7 years. I also went to 7 different countries to collect the data. Mm. And I believe in evidence. I'm an actual real physicist. I'm a PhD physicist. I don't like lies. They have no place for a scientist. And because they come to get you eventually. even in science, don't tell the global warming people that, but it will come to bite them, and the bite is going to be serious.
Science is going to get real inconvenient at some point in time.
Yeah, I have some strong feelings that science is not meant to terrorize people with. It's supposed to help people and not terrorize them and not scare them out of their tax money, especially if the simple truth costs just $25 for an infrared thermometer. All you need to do is buy one of those pointed at the sky and see what it reads. You know, I'm so sick of this stuff, I can't handle it anymore. So I became this physicist. I ended up in Canada. I wrote this book, and for my sins, when people started reading this, I started getting contacted. And lo and behold, for example, by none other than Aaron and a slew of other people. And so I've been spending some of my time doing little interviews like this. Okay? And apparently I'm saying something that people are either terrified to hear or they're glad to hear it or whatever, but folks keep coming back.
It's really helpful because we are, the history of humankind was kept alive through storytelling.
Yeah, well, you can't see the forest if you're inside of it.
Yeah. You have to hear people who were on the ground, who have firsthand knowledge, and that's, you know, our world is filled right now with a lot of opinion. You know, the quote news is very much opinion oriented, and so we're very light on facts.
I have to make this little disclaimer at some point. One is, you know me by now, at some point I'm going to unhelpably get sarcastic, so I have to apologize.
I'm a big fan.
Because I really do understand that, as a famous English comedian said, don't tell sarcastic jokes to Americans. They don't like sarcasm and they carry guns.
but see, Harry, we cater to an audience that is smart, and the only reason people don't like sarcasm is because they're not smart enough to understand it or fight back. Actually, it could be one or both.
And then the other point is sort of a point of some exasperation on my part. I would like to make it clear that I am not uniquely intelligent. In fact, I can prove to you that my wife is more intelligent than I am, and she beat me at chess every time we played that thing, and in fact, she managed to crack a rib of mine in a chess game. But that was because I lost again, and I kind of stood up, and I roared at her in fun, but she put her knees up, and I walked straight into the knee and cracked my rib.
Wow.
So you guys
play pretty hard.
So I have, a cracked rib is testimony to the fact that my wife is more intelligent than I am. So much for he's a clever guy and he knows things because he's clever. Not true. Next, I don't have access to any information that other people do not have access to. The only thing that's weird or odd about me is that I grew up in South Africa and I've lived some of the stuff that the left in your country is playing with. Okay? That's all. I got exposed to this stuff the hard way. So it's not intelligence, it's not insight, it's none of these things. Okay, it's not because I'm a physicist. Anyway,
it is really useful though, because in order for us to make all these connections, and I always encourage people, go back and listen to the early shows that we did with you, explaining the parallels of American history, and we showed up so much farther behind. You guys had already been there and done that. And by the time we came on the scene, and it's still happening that way. Things are still ahead of us in South Africa, and we really can learn a lot. But I don't think people are watching that at all. They don't see that there's a parallel.
Well, they don't take the time to even study their own history.
Well, then there's that.
Let alone...
So what I would like to do is I'm going to make this connection for you in a different way from before.
Okay.
And what I'd like to do is I got this couple of drop-dead important historical facts about South Africa, which are probably weird for people. They're going to say, what? Okay, and I want them to say, huh? You serious? Okay, and it's 100% true, and you have not in the United States typically heard this, and you have been told almost the diametric opposite in most cases. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to draw the line through for you from the fact that you were misled about this to how you are being misled right now. Because, to a certain degree, it's the same guy who's doing it to you. Okay? And I will reveal his miserable identity. So, here are my drop-dead important historical facts. I had to put these together for a... I had like 25 minutes at a Red Pill conference some years ago, so I had to summarize these. Here's the first one. When the Dutch settled the Cape of Good Hope in 1652, the nearest black people were 700 miles away, behind the 350-millimeter summer rainfall line, with its higher rainfall and tall grass for cattle. Their civilization was based on milk, and they invaded from the northeast, supplanting the indigenous Khoi and Sun people. So, no, there were not black people on the beach when the Dutch landed at the Cape, okay? Just so everybody can hear that clearly. Number two, it actually took two generations from 1652 to 1702 before white and black met each other over land about 600 miles east of Cape Town. It took five generations until 1780 before the first major clash between black and white at that same spot, which is the Great Fish River. So, no black people on the beach when the Dutch got there, and in fact it took five generations between white and black clashed. No indigenous black South African person was ever enslaved by any white man from anywhere. Not Portuguese, not British, not Danish, not Swedish, not Spanish, not French. No one. However, Nelson Mandela's Amakosa people did enslave the Amafango. Mozambique and Angola were the nearest places where the Portuguese traded in slaves. But their slave routes bypassed the coast of South Africa. And that was because it's a stormy coast. They tried to avoid it. And their interaction with the Sun and Khoi people at the southern tip was so bad that they just avoided the place. Hmm. Then, for the fourth point, think about this. I've just told you that black South Africans were not enslaved by white men from anywhere. It is, in fact, the white South Africans, not the black ones, whose ancestors were slaves of the Dutch. I am an example. I have an Angolan ancestor called Isabella, back in the late 1600s, okay? These slaves were often Indian or Indonesian, but sometimes black from East or West Africa. And as I wrote here, this white author has a black West African slave ancestor. I'm the guy with a black slave ancestor, not Mandela. Okay? Right. Next, the indigenous Cape population were not the black people. It was the Khoi and the Sun people. As a culture, they were almost completely destroyed by the great smallpox epidemic of 1730.
And where did they originate in South Africa?
There's a whole bunch of DNA studies around this, because it's been a mystery to everybody. And the DNA seems to suggest that they have a connection to the sort of Ethiopia area, whereas the black people of South Africa have a connection to Nigeria, Cameroon, those places.
Okay.
But the interesting thing for anyone listening is that show some respect for the Sun people, that are some of the most primitive on Earth, and they are likely the ancestors of every one of us. They have the oldest, broadest DNA base on the planet. Wow. They exhibit every trait exhibited by every other form of humanity. Hmm. So if you're looking for epicanthic folds on the eyes, you'll find that with them.
And how big of a culture or civilization was that?
Bill, I couldn't quite hear that. You're a bit soft for me.
How big of a culture or civilization were those people at that time?
They were the Sun were and are hunter-gatherers. They live in family clans. They never really got out of the Stone Age.
Okay.
There are no structures that they built anywhere. They live by breaking up camp and moving to the next one. Or at least they did until late in the last century. To a large degree, they were wiped out by the black people. And somehow, with some intermixture, the Khoi people, who were indeed the ones at the Cape when the Dutch arrived, the Khoi are the nearest DNA neighbors to the Sun.
Okay.
If there's a book by a guy called Spencer Wells, he did the original work on this, and he went all over the planet tracing people, trying to find the route back to where did it all start, and eventually at the end of this whole odyssey of his, he ends up with a Sun Bushman in South Africa.
No kidding. Interesting. When we come back, yeah. I want you to tell people about the distinction, because like in this country we had an evolution from Negro through colored to black, and those all meant basically the same thing. Yeah. It was just what was considered appropriate at the time. I guess just to make a short answer of it. But in South Africa, that's not true. Those mean different things.
I'll explain that for you. If I could quickly just finish my short list of drop-dead points. Then I'll get into what do these words mean in South Africa.
No worries.
And they connect to these Khoi and Sun.
All right. We're going to come. We have to take a really quick break. We'll come right back with our guest, Dr. Harry Bouillens. And we're chatting about South Africa. You can find all the shows we've done with him, along with lots of other topics, as a matter of fact. 14 years worth of topics at We the People Radio.
.us.
Tomorrow. Okay. Back to your list.
So I've given you five of the drop-dead important points about South Africa. I got four more.
Okay.
The first is that since 1814, the white Afrikaner, which is the same as a white Amerikaner or American, has had no right of return to Europe, unlike the colonial Portuguese, colonial British, colonial French. So today's Afrikaner's great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was the last man with any right of return. In 1836, they were deserted by their British overlords, packed their ox wagons, put their family Bibles on the back, sometimes they put the piano on the back, and they set off into darkest Africa to get away from British control. This is the moment at which I tell you guys, we never managed to do that. And now you know how it turns out when you don't. You have no idea how lucky you are that you won your war. So they settled mostly on the higher central prairie country, mostly not occupied by black people. And there they had their two corn and ranching republics until diamonds and gold were discovered, at which case the British very quickly developed a great concern for people in the neighborhood and had to come in and protect them. Right? That's how they always do it.
Yep.
Okay. The Afrikaner was not part of Europe's late 1800s scramble for Africa when they colonized the entire Africa. My guys gave their lives fighting Imperial Britain's colonial expansion in two different wars. We won the first, we lost the second. The Germans did not invent concentration camps. The British did. They invented them for us in the Great Boer War of 1899 to 1902. Of my Boyan's family who entered those camps, 57% died there in 1901. Okay, now, none of this was known to Americans before. Well, take this with a grain of salt, but I'm saying largely all of this is unknown to Americans until Mandela appeared on the scene in the very late 1980s and early 90s, and there was a book called Long Walk to Freedom, and Mandela was then trotted out for the world as being this angel of peace, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody wanted to find out something, and suddenly everybody's an expert on South Africa, and they know what's going on, and ooh, it's just like America, and parallels are drawn that are not parallels. And suddenly, I'm accused of everything that an American has a guilty conscience about. Okay? So, I took note of that at the time, but I also didn't realize where this would ultimately lead at that time. Now, that book, I have it here. And believe me, every liberal leftist in the world has a copy of it because they read that instead of the Bible. And its name is Long Walk to Freedom. Just give me a second here.
Well, even today, Mandela is seen as the savior of...
Oh, yeah.
That opinion has never changed.
Anger and sorrow, love and joy, grace and elegance, says the Daily News, etc. The riveting memoir of the outstanding moral and political leader of our time. Okay. Great. Now, unlike all those guys who keep it as an unread showpiece on their mantelpiece and in their lounge to show off to their other liberal friends, I read the darn thing. And there's a lot in there, but interestingly, there's something that wasn't in there. And that was the fact that he was a member of the Central Committee of the South African Communist Party.
Hmm.
That was amazingly absent. In fact, any indication that he was into the communist thing was carefully missing from this. So I should have realized this at the time, but it only struck me many years later, around 2013, just before Mandela died. Somebody found, of all places, in the Mandela Memorial Library, they found the original notes for the book. And in it, he clearly wrote about what his communist convictions were and what his role was. But it's not in the book. So you start asking yourself, but how did that disappear? And you realize that if that had been left in the book, whoever was the ghostwriter, knew that Americans wouldn't buy Mandela.
Yeah, he would have been tainted.
With such direct communist eyes, no ways could he be portrayed as the saint they required him to be. And so his communist activities were erased from the book. That raises the question, who is the author? Who is the ghostwriter for Mandela? So that takes a bit of homework until you realize that he's capitalizing on that and he's walking around very proud about it. And in fact, Mandela was the godfather to his one child. And his name is Richard Stengel, S-T-E-N-G-E-L, Stengel. And Richard Stengel, at one point, worked at Time magazine and became, ultimately, editor at Time magazine. He became the boss. And, subsequently, he became an organizer for Obama, and then he was appointed. Wait, I gotta get you this title because it's so cool. Under Secretary of State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs. Now, Richard Stengel himself described himself as Obama's propaganda czar. So, are you starting to wonder why things twisted a certain way? This guy is still in your woodwork. He's the man in charge of something known as NewsGuard. You may want to look up NewsGuard in Wikipedia, but please be careful because the boss of Wikipedia is also on NewsGuard. How cool.
Not going to be too biased.
Okay,
huh.
So you cannot believe a damn thing you read until you first checked out who's writing. So
right.
NewsGuard is based in New York City, says Wikipedia. His advisors include former officials such as Tom Ridge of Homeland Security, Richard Stengel, former Undersecretary for State and Public Diplomacy, Michael Hayden, former CIA Director, Anders Fogh Rasmussen, former NATO Chief, and Wikipedia founder Jimmy Wales, just so as you know. Okay? And what NewsGuard does is it basically tells your media what to say and not say, more particularly what to not say. Like maybe it shouldn't talk about Hunter Biden's laptop. Maybe it should never talk about Burisma. Maybe it shouldn't question, you know, any injections associated with COVID. Maybe you should not have an article saying that this thing bred out in Wuhan. Maybe. Are you getting me yet?
Yeah, because, well, the whole Wuhan thing, yeah. Super inconvenient. That I mean, we were doing interviews with Chinese scientists in February of 2020 who absolutely confirmed that it was a lab leak. And it's like, how could we possibly know this and the rest of the world somehow doesn't? Yeah, unlikely.
But, Aaron, you see, and here is where I have to put my little asterisk on the screen that says, careful sarcasm, okay? We don't have to worry. Richard Stengel is out there watching out for us. Okay? Mm. He has only your best interests at heart.
I feel so much better.
I lost my country because of him.
Wow.
Okay? And you're going to lose yours because of him.
And he is absolutely flying under the radar at this point.
Is absolutely flying under the radar. He is viciously effective. He's well-spoken. He knows what he's doing. Okay? And I don't think Americans can go into this election, particularly not Republicans. They can't go into this election without knowing who this guy is. Okay, so
yeah.
I did something very interesting, which I thought you guys would find fascinating.
Oh, and you know, I want you to know that... Since I'm reading your mind, I posted that. We have to jump out of here because we're going to get killed by the news here. But when we come right back, I know where we're headed, and looking forward to it. Our guest is Dr. Harry Booyans. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm going to do bad things, do it like it's nothing. Being bad has never felt. Doing bad things to you.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the second half of We the People Radio here on September 1st, 2024. And Bill reminded me we had some little announcements. Okay, let's see. First is, if you are in Shasta County, there is a Republican headquarters. If you want Trump flags and gear and stuff like that and yard signs for Republican candidates running for office, you can find that at 150 East Cypress. It's the two-story brick building across from Lithia Chevrolet. Think about when you used to go to the hatch cover and you go up Hempstead. It's right there on the left. And same building as Pulse Urgent Care, so that ought to be enough info. If you need more, you can find it at ShastaGOP.com.
Wow.
And, okay, over to you, Bill, for our sponsor, because I have a free advertisement of the week, but I got to look it up.
Yeah, look that up. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. And if you need a tractor, small tractor, up to... Well, I don't know, up to 60 horse, say. That's not too small. But if you need a tractor, implements, mowers, anything turf-related, go up and see them. They've got a great inventory right now, and they'll make you a good deal. Summer's slowly coming to an end. Mowing season's going to pick back up again, and you don't want to
Very slowly.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to get caught without without your mower ready to roll. So if it needs a tune-up or... needs to be looked at, go up and see them. Their service department is anxious and ready to work on your tractor. So go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call at 530-226-9226. Or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da! Okay, my free advertisement of the week, should have done it a couple weeks ago, but we weren't here, is McDonald's Budget Printing here in Reading. Super nice people and super, super fast. I walked in with a flyer for a friend. She needed like 150 copies or 100 copies or whatever, and they're like, oh, we'll just do it right now. Like, what? Right now? Thank you. They're at 2647 Bocelli Lane. Phone number is 530-222-0322. They're right across from Liquor Barn there on Bocelli. So that's McDonald's Budget Printing. Highly recommend. Super nice people. They do the graphics if you want it. But if all you need is printing, it's, well, give you an idea. I spent $30 on, I don't know, 8 or 9 flyers for a project I was doing because they were two-sided, blah, blah, blah. But I got 100 other flyers for, I don't know, $25 or something. It was ridiculous. The cost was... I mean, it was ridiculous. So anyway, go see the nice folks at McDonald's. And our guest, Dr. Harry Booyans, has got a whole lot of info for us. So we're right back to you, Harry. It's all you.
So there's this clip of the man talking, and I thought what we could do is I could do a little thing here that I, little stunt I pulled with Copilot, Microsoft's AI. And I told it, tell me more about Richard Stengel's background. And so it waxed lyrically in 5 points. His early career, collaboration with Nelson Mandela, government service, authorship and advocacy, and current role as executive director of the Committee to Protect Journalists. And in summary, says Copilot, in summary, Richard Stengel's journey spans journalism, collaboration with a global icon, government service, and advocacy for press freedom. His multifaceted background reflects his dedication to promoting informed dialogue and protecting the integrity of journalism worldwide. So, after Copilot generated that, I jotted down next to it, Harry thinks, quote, yeah, yeah, violin music. Does he also walk on water? This is the man who wrote Mandela's autobiography and then carefully removed his client's connection with the South African Communist Party. But he got caught out by both Rian Milan, author, and reality. So, going live, I then said to Copilot, you did not mention his creation of the Global Engagement Center and his public justification of the need for government propaganda. Comes the answer from Copilot. I apologize for the oversight. You are absolutely correct. Richard Stengel played a significant role in the creation of the Global Engagement Center during his tenure as Undersecretary for State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs. And then he goes on, says, let me provide more context, blah, 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 blah. And then it says, in summary, Richard Stengel's involvement in the GEC, that's the Global Engagement Center, and his perspectives on strategic communication highlight the ongoing challenges.
Propaganda is now strategic communication. Okay.
Yeah. And the ongoing challenges in an era of information warfare. Thank you for pointing out this crucial aspect of his career.
And thank you.
I wrote down here, my God, these people have a nerve. Do they so comprehensively believe their own BS? I guess the answer is yes.
But see, that's where most people won't dig a little deeper on a lot of this AI-generated information. It's absolutely edited and one-sided. But they read that and they go, yeah, see right there, he's a great guy. Well, he's doing a great job.
We call that curated knowledge. And just so that people know, if you go to the September 1st, 2024 page of wethepeopleradio.us, if you go on there, I did post that. I posted that whole clip. It's under the thing that says for today's show, and I did the little dialogue because it was so great. I thought, oh my gosh, this is the best. This is the best representation of how AI will, if it's even possible, to dumb down our world even more. It was not in Idiocracy, the movie, but it should have been, because honestly, this is the underpinning of our fall, if in fact we allow it to take any sort of lead role.
Yeah, I hear you. So now there's this little clip that I suggested. And I've done a quick check, maybe from about 14 seconds to 35 seconds. That should make the point.
Okay. Hey, Christina, can we do that? 14 to 35? We loaded it up on the news break. Super ahead of the schedule here.
And, you know, my old job at the State Department was what people used to joke as the chief propagandist job. We haven't talked about propaganda. Propaganda, I'm not against propaganda. Every country does it, and they have to do it to their own population. And I don't necessarily think it's that awful. And this idea news cartel, I mean, I was editor of Time in 2012 during that election, and I remember, you know, you're competing against cartels and everybody. I remember being on a panel with the then editor of the New York Times, who said, it's really hard to break through these days. This is the editor of the New York Times saying it's hard to break through. I wanted to jump off the platform. Like, what's it like for the rest of everybody?
So, okay,
I mean, there are cartels.
That's probably okay up to that.
Yeah, well, you know, so, obviously propaganda is terrific, and what's the problem?
Yeah, it's necessary.
We're just alarmists?
Well, you just have to propagandize your own people.
Right, right. And you just have to be the one running the propaganda, actually. That's the bottom line, is
when Obama goes out of office, your thing that you created continues, still populated by your little dumb ponies. Yeah, and so these people know no end, okay? There's nothing they will not do. Before 13 July, I told another gentleman that I believe you know, Dan Happel, in a phone call, I told him, these people are going to engineer an attempt on Trump's life. I'm telling you that. You had better watch out for this.
Man.
There's going to be an attempt to kill Trump. I guarantee you that.
Yeah.
2 weeks.
Well, they're certainly not doing anything to not promote it. I mean, some of the things they say, I think, is really just exciting people to go out and make a name for themselves with Trump. And I don't care what you say, they're. I think the cause of a lot of this political assassination talk. I mean, they're hyping it.
Oh yeah. Well, he's going to destroy democracy and blah blah blah. Do you find it as funny in Canada as, I mean, funny, bad funny, as some of us do here, that I think people outside of the United States realize we're a representative republic, and it's like our own citizenry hasn't gotten the memo. It's like, we're not a democracy, you knuckleheads. What the heck?
Democracy is cool unless you disagree with the Democrat Party.
Right.
Then democracy is an evil that has to go.
Yeah, democracy is terrific as long as you're in the majority and the mob rule is your ruling mob. Yeah.
Don't I just know about that? I was 1/10 of the population, so...
You've met the mob rule?
You know, yeah, absolutely. And this is the interesting thing about it. This is where I agree with Putin. Because he sat there one day at some other meeting where he was talking to young Russians, and they recorded this thing, and it's still out there on the internet somewhere. And he said, the problem is everything the United States touches turns into Libya. Those were his words.
Well, can't disprove
and
that.
It's not that the U.S. is the touch of death or anything like that. It's that he made those statements in Obama's time, and the U.S. at that point was on a crusade to bring democracy to everyone. I mean, Bush Jr. also had his speech about, don't worry, if we can just give people democracy, they will somehow wisen up and, you know, throw flowers around and be nice. I don't know where people get that garbage from.
Yeah, because everyone loves to be oppressed, right? So, take your oppressors and just let them tell you what's what and stop fighting it.
And Putin was saying that the U.S. is starting color revolutions everywhere, referring to the Orange Revolution and so forth in Ukraine. And, you know, the Arab Spring and I don't know what else, all that garbage. The point is that South Africa was the first color revolution. You want to see how it turned out?
Yeah, well, you live in Canada now, so enough said,
yeah,
right?
That's why.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I live in Canada, because the guys who were the majority, one of them looked me straight in the face in front of witnesses and said, no, you don't understand, Harry. Our aim is to get rid of all people like you. Says to my face in front of witnesses. Everybody else had eyes like saucers. Of course, they knew this guy was well-connected in the ANC government.
Terrific.
So this is where democracy shows its true color, and they will tell you to your face that they want to get rid of you, kill you, etc., etc. Okay? And then you need to decide what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Now, I could leave South Africa and come to Canada. Where are you going to go?
Well,
where exactly are Americans going to go?
Well,
so you got to decide whether you're going to stand and fight for what you understand America to be, or whether you're going to just roll over and just accept what Richard Stengel tells you the truth is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and with guys like that, who needs enemies?
I mean, we were like 3.5 million folks in South Africa. We had no fighting chance. Zero. Now, you've seen now, initially people wouldn't believe things when we said that they were being lied to. Now, ever since 2016, sort of like round about May 2016, which, as I recall it, is when Trump was anointed as the candidate. Starting that moment, Americans have received the same treatment as what we received in South Africa in the 1980s and early 90s. Now you've seen for yourselves what this media monster will do. You've seen for yourselves the depth of depravity that it will sink to. You've seen for yourselves what it is prepared to do. Okay? Well, they got away with it, doing it to us. We didn't have a hope in hell against it. But that doesn't mean I should shut up and not warn you.
Yeah.
Bo, you had a question earlier, and I owe you an answer, and you used terminology in the U.S., sort of social terminology, and in South Africa. In South Africa, today still, whether people want to hear it or not, today still, there are four groupings of people. They are called white, black, colored, and Indian. And the Indian kind of stands out a little bit, but it is because Indians were brought into South Africa en masse in the late 1800s to work on sugarcane fields, and it was a British escapade to do that. It ended up so that somewhere around the 90s, there were like a million Indians in South Africa, and so large a population and so large a defined group that they actually have their own representative in the Indian Parliament in India. A unique situation. Now, so those are the Indians. Most of them lived around Durban, the coastal subtropical town next to the sugarcane fields. The next grouping are whites. Go look in the mirror. That's more or less what a white is. In our case, they are typically either British descended or Dutch, French, German. The proportions of Dutch, French, and German vary a bit, but I received a paper just the other day of a vast DNA study, and it says that it's something like 45% Dutch, 30% French, and something like 25% German. My own makeup is 40% Dutch, 30% German, 25% French. Okay. And you can usually tell these folks by the fact that they speak either Dutch-derived Afrikaans or they speak English. Now, there's also a large population of people that are referred to as black in South Africa. Now, there's no confusion in South Africa on that subject, and there's no sort of history like in the U.S. on that. In South Africa, there are something like 11 different distinct black nations, each with territory and each with a language. some of those languages are mutually intelligible, some of them are not. In broad terms, the black people of South Africa are in two groups, those along the East Coast and those behind the 11,000-foot mountains. It's a little bit like the split between the Algonquin people or the guys to the west of the Rockies, like, what are they, the Blackfoot and, I think, Flathead, etc., the Salish people on the coast, as opposed to the Sioux and those people on the east. Now, the colored...
Hold that thought,
yeah.
Because we're a little bit overdue. We're having some incoming guests and whatnot in the studio, but Christina's back with the buttons again. We've got to take a little quick break. We'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Harry Boogens, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
We go. Okay, on to the next category, Harry.
Yeah, so the question then, what is, in South Africa, what was and still is meant with the word colored? And in South Africa, it means everybody else. Oh, sorry, I should exclude Chinese people specifically. Okay, so the South African government wanting to get money out of China was very quick to make a separate category out of Chinese people, and they were rebranded in the last several years as, wait for it, honorary black. To the great never-ending amusement of my South African Chinese friends here in Canada. Boy, did I have a good time with them on that.
Honorary
black.
Okay. Honorary, especially when me and them went to do some music recording and we ended up with a black recording engineer. And, oh man, that got to be seriously funny. he laughed his head off. Okay, so when you look at the vast bulk of the so-called colored people in South Africa, they are descendants of directly the Khoi, a tiny handful of Sun people who remained, and of relationships typically between white guys and women out of any other population group. This goes back to like the 1600s and 1700s, particularly ex-slaves. In that respect, there's a similarity to the U.S. But the thing that the U.S. does not have is an indigenous black nation with a culture, a language, a history, and a territory. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that Americans have difficulty connecting with, is that in South Africa, the indigenous black people are exactly that, indigenous. Yeah, they invaded from the northeast, but they did so over hundreds of years. Nobody's trying to say that they're not indigenous. They're there. So that's something that you don't have in the U.S., and most black people in the U.S. trace their history back to slavery. In South Africa, as I already indicated, there is zero of that. There's no such trace. And so, in South Africa, the term colored is abjectly different meaning as compared with the U.S. In the U.S., it was used in all kinds of ways. You know, then it was colored, now it's black. You decide what you want to call it. That's your game. It's the U.S. I'm not going to go nuts about that. I'm just telling you what it means in South Africa. Now, if you go to a typical colored person in South Africa, to the degree that there is a typical one, you will find that his mother tongue is Afrikaans, just like mine. You will find that he speaks it with a distinctly Cape accent. They have a way they sound when they speak. No, it's not like they have a different culture. It's that they have a different intonation and way of speaking. So I am, as far as I'm concerned, they're all Afrikaners just like me. I see no problem of any sorts there. But historically, people seem to think it was important to make a distinction. Oddly, those people who did that all went comfortably to their graves and didn't have to live with the consequences of the garbage they created. So, you know, the political garbage they created. So what you find is that the vast bulk, by far, like 90-something percent, of the colored people of South Africa live in the Western Cape province. They're in the West Cape, or I should say, they're in the western half or western third of South Africa. The actual province of Western Cape is a smaller territory. They're in the West Cape and North Cape. That's the place where they mostly live. And that is why the political party that governs that part of the country is a different one. It's the Democratic Alliance, whereas the ANC, African National Congress, is based on the black people of South Africa, and that commands the East. Because the ANC has the national majority, they're in control of the country, and they're doing their best to edge out everybody else in the West Cape, and they're not succeeding. Now, at some point, if you're interested, we can talk about what's happened in the last few months in South Africa, because I'm now more worried about the U.S. than I am South Africa. Yeah. What happened with a very recent election in South Africa is that the Nelson Mandela's African National Congress lost its straight majority. It lost it because the left wing of that party, mostly Zulu, broke away to form a brazenly communist Umkhonto we Sizwe party, carrying the name of Nelson Mandela's old military wing. And interestingly, because the ANC lost its majority, it now had to make a coalition government. It elected not to make a coalition with that breakaway left-wing communist party. It made a coalition with the Democratic Alliance, which is very much colored and white-based. The colored people in South Africa realize that if the blacks have total control over everything, they're dead. They know they're dead. The Indians know if the blacks have control over everything, they're dead. They've lived part of that before. The white people know it too. And so you'll find that the other three groups try to sort of hang out together when the chips are down. And now you see it with the formation of this coalition government. I do not know what caused the ANC to avoid making a coalition with its own left wing, because it could have worked, numbers-wise. I suspect that various parties in the Western world must have been breathing down their necks and telling them what was going to happen if they did. That's all I can think. Because they don't particularly take note of anybody in South Africa, not even their own voters. They just pillage the country.
They just plow ahead.
Yeah, yeah. Historically, it's a one-party state because they had such total control that they would make all the decisions. It's like a situation where the Democrats have total control of the country, which they've done with government structures. They have total say. Theoretically, they have total control of the country. So they don't actually go to Congress to make laws and formulate new laws, whatever. They write them up at their party Congress, and then they bring them to Parliament for a vote. Don't look now, but that's more or less what's happening in Europe.
Yeah, well, and okay. That's what they'd like to have here.
The European Parliament is not a law-making parliament. It's a law rubber-stamping parliament.
Yeah.
The laws are formulated by a commission. The good news is that the ANC's overwhelming majority has fractured, has broken, and somehow something forced them into a coalition with basically the whites and coloureds by any other name. That's what you have down there. The problem in North America is you have a Democratic Party that for the last several years under Obama and then again under Biden was hell-bent on turning the country into the South Africa that I left behind, that I couldn't stomach any further. And that everybody can go and take a look at and realize just how pathetic it is. And you've got to worry about making sure they don't get away with it. And now the interesting thing for me in the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks, maybe 2 weeks, is that somebody has, it sounds to me like they've locked their candidate in a cupboard and put duct tape over her mouth. And someone behind the scenes is reversing in Trump's direction at the speed of light.
Yeah, has it been as entertaining where you are to watch her take his policies and pretend that they're hers? It's like, do you really think we're going to fall for that?
Mm-hmm. Well, she's
if you guys fall for that. Don't bother talking to me, because then
you're... Oh, my God.
Don't worry.
Yeah, we're going to have to go into witness protection in our own country.
Yeah, she's advocating a wall now at the border, so,
yeah.
I mean, gosh, what a novel idea that was.
This is one news anchor girly who confronts, I don't know who the Republican guy is, confronts him about Harris, and he says, well... She was the border czar, and all the stuff happened under her, and the news girlie says, sir, she was not the border czar. She was not the border czar. And then somebody plays the clip where her
she's
job
like
is
the border czar, yeah. I know. It's Richard Stengel? That guy's got to be, you know, kind of riding high. He must be doing really massive... underground seminars with kind of all of our media here. It's a little weird.
They're in all kinds of trouble. I was watching an interview with Mark Zuckerberg, of all creepy people.
Yeah.
You know, considering what he had done.
Right.
And how he had tried to kill off Trump, and not literally, I mean, his accounts and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And he's interviewed about the shooting, and he gets all trembly and his chin starts sort of shaking. He's clearly emotionally done in, and he says, you know, when the man rose up like that and put his fist in the air and said fight, 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 it was amazingly inspiring. That's Mark Zuckerberg who said that. I couldn't believe my eyes. I'm looking at the TV and I re-ran
it.
I wasn't BSing myself. Mark Zuckerberg said it was inspiring. Followed shortly after by a letter to Congress in which he said that the government pressured him in the past to shut down, like, the Hunter Biden story.
Right.
And all of that. So now he confesses.
Well, it's kind of interesting because, like anything else, right, you want to play along with your captors, but at the end of the day, they're still your captors, and they're ultimately going to try to make you do stuff you don't want to do. Even guys like that eventually figure out that their wiggle room goes away. We have to take a really quick...
What is that syndrome that Patty Hearst supposedly had?
Yeah.
Where you associate with your captors.
Yep, the Stockholm Syndrome.
Stockholm Syndrome,
yes,
right?
You think that they're your friends, and then you go, oh, wait a minute, I'm still captive.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
So it looks,
apparently
it looks
they're not
like the left
friends.
Has Stockholm Syndrome right now.
Yeah, a little bit. And then after that, then you try to escape again, typically, unless you just join them. There's that. I guess you go one of two ways. You join them or you try to get away. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Harry Bouyans. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Yeah, we can't talk about all this, Harry, without playing the Twilight Zone because, honestly, it's just too fitting.
Yeah, you played Crazy earlier.
Yes, I thought you might like that too.
Yeah, I had to play that thing personally many nights on stage. Lead guitarist and singer, so that's my other great vice.
Yeah, what's your music thing you were talking about?
Yeah, I think I mentioned this at some point to you, that I'm using software called Jamulus to jam with folks all over North America most evenings.
What do you play?
Do I hear it from all sides?
Nice. Well, what do you play? What is your musical instrument of choice?
I've played the guitar ever since 1963.
Oh.
And I'm historically, I'm a harmony guy. So, most recently, I'm sort of used as the, what does one call it? The guy that does all the charts for people to play from, and then I gotta count them in, and then, you know, if I tell them, well, don't you want to call another song? And everybody says, nah, Harry, you call it. And then after a while, they tell me I'm the leader of the band, but there's no band.
So you're a cross between the conductor and the maestro, I guess.
Yeah, so I keep
or the ringmaster?
The guy who plays guitar and sings a little, you know, can I also sit out now and then, maybe? Just, you know, possibly?
No.
Anyway, that's it. So this is what retired band guys do now.
So they loiter online with other retired band guys and play
music? on the internet, and then when they're tired of playing, they talk American politics.
Nice. So when you guys are playing, is it an open channel that other people listen to, or do you guys just...
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Huh.
You know, you sort of measure what you say, because I got friends who are devoted Blue Dog Democrats, and I got guys who are pretty far right on the Republican side. I've got pro-Ukrainians. I got pro-Russians. I got them all.
Wow. Well, you know, it's a good way to get information. If you kind of chat with everybody, you can, it makes it a little easier to sort out what you think. when you look at, I mean, this election, good grief down here, but when you look at sort of where we are politically and the number of people left over from, like, that Obama era that are still in charge of things, what do you see from your vantage point? Kind of through that South African lens a little bit.
You are busy finishing off Obama's third term.
Yeah.
That's what's going on. From my perspective, that's what it seems like. But you're now in uncharted waters where they've realized that that path has taken them to the edge of a waterfall, and they are swimming at a furious rate backwards against the falls. That's the picture I have. If I had to draw a cartoon of this, I would show a guy with a DNC placard stuck on his neck, okay, swimming furiously upstream away from the edge of a waterfall.
Yeah.
Okay, backpedaling like crazy.
Well, I think that's why you're seeing a lot of these media folks kind of backpedaling, going into self-preservation mode, because they know the garbage they've been spending the last, what, 7 years.
Yeah, it's like, the prices are going down, the prices are going down. It's like, yeah, they're super not going
now
down.
They're just kind of lightly, you know, maybe it's not as great as it. Yeah, it's not as great as they say it is, and it never has been. And they're all getting caught with their pants down, and they're trying
you know, my I don't know what to call it. My American sensor, SENSOR, has typically been fairly solid. And my read of things is that pretty much everybody over 35 is finally done with this whole disaster.
Yeah, the great DEI experiment.
I think ordinary American out there, the guy who actually has to do a job for a living, who has to pay a mortgage, has to put his kids through school and college, okay, they're done. They are so sick of all this, okay? I think if somebody says something woke near them, they're going to slap their heads off.
Yeah. No, it's, and I think that's why you're seeing a lot of these major corporations ditching the whole DEI thing, too, is they see the handwriting on the wall. They see what's coming at them like a freight train, and they're backing out of it to kind of preserve what they have. I mean, you look at what John Deere did, Lowe's, Ford just announced, last week, that they're backing away from a lot of this DEI stuff, and there's a reason. There's a reason.
Yeah, realistically, there's a chance that this woman might win if they can keep her in the cupboard and keep the duct tape over her mouth. Okay? Because they don't really care who's the president. They have their power anyway. To them, it's just a figurehead. It's a dummy who's up there that they can move around.
Mm-hmm.
So if they get, you know, if they keep her shut up, both by body and by mouth, they could possibly take this thing. But my read is away from these college campuses and university campuses and media, the regular American is so done with this stuff, they can hardly breathe. But I got to tell you, there's one thing that bothers me. And while I would like to be on the record as the guy who gets emotional about the preamble to the Declaration of Independence, which I should just remind you, the Dutch kind of wrote for you back in the 1500s already. So that was a large piece of that was copied. But nevertheless, it's a highly inspirational document, and can you get me going on that subject, okay? however, you cannot afford another Jeff Sessions.
No.
You cannot afford another player up there behind Trump who goes into a boxing match with people who've never heard of the Queensberry rules,
right,
who will play dirty and kick you between the legs.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you stand there preaching about the Queensberry rules while you are being destroyed.
Right.
Okay. You cannot, nobody in any form of sport, whether political or otherwise, can stick to the rules if the other party does not. If the referee doesn't call foul, then you have no choice but to kick or bite back. And Jeff Sessions did not understand that, as far as I'm concerned.
No, and interestingly enough, I think Trump was looking at it like a business, you know, first time around. It was business, but we call it government, but it's the same basic structure. And, okay, I guess if you really look at it from the 30,000-foot view, maybe. But he didn't clean out the underpinnings of all of this, and that's kind of why it's still there.
And this is why I'm on record in some places saying Trump needs to clear out the three top management levels,
yep,
of all of these bodies, okay? Really, it's bad. It's seriously bad.
Yeah.
It's a mess at the CIA. It is a mess at the FBI. It's a mess at the Department of Justice.
Well, here, I'll give you just an on-the-ground example from here. We have these dams that are basically all gone, four of them, three of them are hydroelectric, so electricity generated for 70,000 homes, whoosh, gone. And the river is black. We've got pictures of the water just from last Thursday. The water's black. There are no fish. But there was a commercial at the top of the hour talking about how now the river has opened up, the salmon will be returning. But, like, scientists are basically saying, yeah, maybe 50 years from now. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Guarantee you the salmon aren't returning.
In that whole process, to illustrate your point, there is a woman who works for the Yurok tribe, who is their attorney, and has been extremely successful, actually, in arguing this case for quite some time. Well, would you be surprised to find out that number three at the solicitor's office in the Department of the Interior, who is the lawyer who handles all of the interior stuff for water, is her husband. So when you said go down three levels, I'm like, that's terrific. That'll take out Daniel Cordell's. Perfect. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing.
It's everywhere, though.
You look at that and you go, hey, wait a second. Isn't that, that's the same name? What? That's the husband? Yeah. So you, I mean, we've taken that whole analogy of the fox watching the hen house to a new low.
Yeah. I mean, to be very honest, I grew up believing that the premier police function in the world is the FBI. Now I see them as worse than the KGB. They're the enemy of the United States. I mean, it's terrible what they've done.
Well,
it's terrible.
And you know, all deference to my own gender, for heaven's sakes, some of those women, how embarrassing. I'm like, oh, God.
You mean like the Secret Service lady?
Yeah. You get them in these positions like the Secret Service during the assassination. It's like, I don't know. I'm thinking a tall man would have probably been.
Well, they have that.
Better.
I'm literally talking about the boss of the Secret Service who testified.
Then there was her.
Yeah,
I know,
I
but see, there's all this. We've got to give jobs and we've got to hire and we've got to promote based on things other than merit. And as soon as we walked away from a meritocracy, well, it's never going to work like that. You can't run a business like that. Nobody hires a guy to cut their yard who isn't good at it.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't look at his lineage
or
whatever.
When the boss of the Secret Service testified, I looked at this, and I noticed that the Democrats were climbing as hard into her as the Republicans. And I turned to my wife and I said,
the wheels have come off,
honey. They've already decided to sacrifice her. She knows she's going to go. All she has to do is sit there and basically say nothing, take all the flack, take all the junk on her back, and then resign, and she'll be looked after the fact. Okay? And so now all that needs to happen is various Democrats can grandstand at the hearing and make it sound like they're doing something sensible.
I just, yeah, it's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing, and it's ridiculous, and it's very easily remedied. And so
but
until
we have a tiny bit of good news here in Canada, which I should share before we run, and that is that the guy I call Baby Doe, you know, like Play-Doh and Baby Doe,
okay.
the Trudeau baby that's been our prime minister for way too long.
Yeah.
He's now persona non grata, mostly in his own party. Everybody's turned on him. What he did to the truckers was one move too far. And you know about all that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
So we now are facing an election here in British Columbia. The provincial Liberal Party, that's Trudeau's party, is the Liberal Party, or otherwise known as the Party of Government. The Liberal Party was so affronted with the whole thing and felt so blemished that they changed their name to BC United.
Well, that has a nice ring to it.
As they felt they couldn't make it, so they've now joined forces with the BC Conservative Party.
Oh, nice.
Well, that's a move in the right direction.
In deference to your career choices and your time on the top of the grassy knoll, I found a snazzy song to go out with, and we will talk to you again very soon. Thank you so much
for
joining us.
Thanks for coming on, Harry.
You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand.